Hello, good evening and welcome everyone to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council's Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McEwen and I will be chairing this meeting. Just a couple of points before we start. If you have a mobile phone, please set it to silent. And can I ask any members of the public in the gallery to refrain from commenting? On my right, I have officers from the Planning Department, and on my left, I have officers from the Law and Administration Department. Officers from the Planning Department will present each application separately as it appears on the agenda. Members of the public who have indicated to speak will be given 3 minutes, and I will indicate when they've taken up two of those. Ward members are entitled to speak for up to 5 minutes, and again, I'll give a 1 minute warning. An audio recording is being taken of this meeting, which shall be published on the Council's website. Members of the committee are reminded that they do not enjoy any immunity as that enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning applications before them in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework and the local plan, together with any other relevant planning matters. So I move to the agenda, and I have some minutes to sign from previous meetings of the 10th of July and the 31st of July. Am I okay to sign those?
Oh, no, certainly.
Thank you. And do we have any apologies?
Councillor Fordham substituted by Councillor Kenny and Councillor P. Jones substituted by Councillor James.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any declarations of members' interest or any lobbying that they may have encountered? Councillor Kenny?
Yes, Chair, I'd like to declare a predetermination of the second item for the Co-op Department.
Okay, and does Councillor Kenny have to remove himself from the table?
He has to remove himself from the table. He can remain in the public gallery provided he doesn't interact with anyone.
Okay, any other interests or lobbying? No. Delegated applications are okay. Right, so we move to item 5, planning applications, which starts on page 3, and we start with 24/38835, land adjacent to Nebraska, Moss Lane, Moss Gate, called in by Councillor Francis Beattie. So, Richard Wood, you will take this one, please.
Good evening, members. This application proposes the change of use of a garden centre to residential to provide a single-storey self-built house and attached single garage. The proposal also includes the siting of a temporary caravan and the demolition of all existing building structures on the site. We see from the report that the application follows the granting of a lawful development certificate, which confirmed the use of the site as a garden centre, and the refusal of a residential scheme under 23/37764/COU for a two-storey dwelling and double garage. Before I run through the presentation, I'd just like to bring members' attention to a procedural issue in that there are some inconsistencies in the report. Can I refer you to paragraph 3.1, and this relates to the where we go on to discuss the impact on greenbelt openness, in that paragraph says, other than a brick outbuilding to the northwestern boundary, all structures have been removed. And then, consistent with that, at 6.9, that goes on to state that on the officer's site visit, there was only one permanent structure retained on the site. But if you then look at 6.19, and this is the correct reference, you'll see that given that the only building standing is a brick building with a flat roof and a block garage in the corner of the site, so that's actually referring to two buildings. So if I just point those out to you on the aerial.
Did you all understand that, or do you want any clarification? Or go through it?
So some paragraphs refer to one building only being on the site, the other paragraph refers to there being two. So the building's in question, this is the outbuilding here, and this is the garage, both of which stand on site. And these are former glass houses. So the report therefore does acknowledge the presence of the garage when assessing the impact on Greenbelt openness. But you'll see from the report that there is a disagreement with the applicant's calculations, as these include the glass houses and polytunnels, which officers consider to represent, not to represent permanent structures. The site is located within the open countryside and the North Staffordshire Greenbelt. And from the report, members will note that the main issues essentially surround three matters: the impacts of the proposal on the openness of the North Staffordshire Greenbelt, for which no very special circumstances are considered to have been demonstrated; the location of the proposed dwelling outside of the sustainable settlement hierarchy, where no need has been provided; and some highway reasons in terms of the site's unsustainable location, due to the reliance on the use of a private car and the increased risk between pedestrian and vehicle conflicts. But members, you'll probably see from comparing the four reasons for refusal to the previous application on page 6 of the agenda and those on page 22 for this proposal that they are generally similar. If I just take you through the presentation now, so this is Moss Lane. We have the dwelling of Nebraska here to the southeast, and another neighbour, Moss Acre, here. The access into the site is approximately here. So as you can see from this aerial, this is the existing outbuilding here. This is the garage referred to, this is the location of the former glass houses and some raised beds where previously polytunnels were. This is the access here. So all the photographs are from one point from the access into the site. There's a cluster of 7 photographs taken. So this is looking across the site. You can see that the site's fairly cleared. This is the outbuilding here. You can see the remnants of the glasshouse frames and some raised beds and a polytunnel cover. Again, this is the another picture of the outbuilding, and again, and this was actually taken in spring. This is looking northwest along Moss Lane, and this is looking in the opposite direction, where you can see the driveway into Moss Acre. And again, this is another photograph looking across the site. You can see the raised beds, glass house frames, Nebraska, and the rear ground. So coming on to the proposal itself, this shows the red edge of the existing access. Now this is the scheme which is now proposed. So we have the dwelling here. Footprint of the garage, the access into the site, with here you can just see the proposed gates and walling, which is referred to in the report, and here this would be the location for the siting of the temporary caravan. This shows some of the existing buildings on the site. So this is the outbuilding, and this is the garage structure which we don't have a photograph of, but this is taken, this is included within the submitted drawing. And this is the floor plan of the proposed dwelling, two bedrooms, with the front and rear elevations. This is the side elevations with the roof plan and the proposed single garage. The recommendation is to refuse for the reasons listed. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. I believe we have a supporter, Juliet Heather. Juliet, you have 3 minutes.
Okay.
I'll give you a shout when you're 2 minutes into it. Okay. Thank you.
The site has been in my family's ownership since 1957, where it traded as a retail garden centre known as Heather's Roses, operated by my grandfather and then father and uncle, before it closed due to retirement and ill health in 2007. It has an up-to-date lawful development certificate. The cost of local housing is prohibitive for people like me who live alone. Detached properties in the area are going for a minimum $600,000. This is to be a self-built dwelling designed by me for myself, and I intend to live here for the rest of my days, continuing my family's links with the site. I was born in Moss Lane. I feel extremely connected to it, and it will contribute to meeting the council's self-built shortfall. There are some key inaccuracies within the committee report. Your officers are incorrect when they state there is only one building. Scattered across the site are two brick buildings, two large timber and metal framed glass houses, which weren't on the photographs, a polished one up, and two fixed brick plant sale areas. All have been in place for over 60 years. These structures have not blended into the environment and would all be removed. My agent's planning statement sets out the case law that supports residential repurposing in the Greenbelt. Precedents in law confirm that glass houses and polished tunnels do impact negatively on the openness of the Greenbelt. My home would dramatically reduce the build area by up to 60%, or even at the planning officer's estimation at 29%. The concentration of development at the centre of the site, combined with clearing old structures and hard standing, including the large car parking area, plus landscaping, will improve the openness of the Greenbelt, and so comprise an appropriate form of development in the Greenbelt. I believe I've come up with a sensitive scheme whilst having a positive impact on the Greenbelt. The entrance gates will retain the existing stone pillars with metal gates. The proposal would have a very low visual impact from the road. It would undoubtedly enhance the character and appearance of the lane and our local area.
One minute.
Indeed, I have support from all the neighbours, and one neighbour registered to speak in support today before I took the slot instead. This change of use will result in substantially less vehicle movements set out in our transport statement. This matters in assessing the sustainable residential credentials of the site against its existing retail use, which could recommence without requiring any planning permission. I disagree with your officers there will be an increased conflict between vehicles and pedestrians. There's not a day I haven't seen cyclists. There are grass verges. I regularly walk to Roseland from my current home to spend time there, taking a picnic and chatting to neighbours. I walk to Mum's in Moss Lane at least once a week, and I'm part of a regular walking group between 3 and 8 of us who use the lane. I therefore respectfully ask that members approve planning permission on the basis the proposal comprises appropriate development in the Greenbelt and more sustainable development than the existing authorised use of the site. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Well timed. Councillor Francis Beattie, I believe you called it in. You have 5 minutes.
Members, this garden centre has lived through change. Its buildings have seen better days, as you can see from pictures, but now the site needs a future. It's not going to revert to nature because it's a brownfield site with commercial permissions. Is it the ideal place for a 21st century commercial business? No, it's not. So what should it have instead? Ironically, it seems okay that our planning law permits for two tiny dwellings within the existing buildings on this redundant plot, that the law alternatively permits a sizable commercial business with its attendant noise, lighting, traffic, as an appropriate form of development on this quiet lane on the Greenbelt. But the most logical reuse, a modest local home, must jump through hoops. We know that the government's current consultation on the Greenbelt, which should be law by the end of the year, wants greater flexibility to redevelop brownfield sites in the Greenbelt for appropriate housing, specifically encouraging small sites for self-build and custom-build housing such as this. This application is for a home for a local person who has deep-seated roots in the community to repurpose her own bit of land, brownfield site, in an area where house prices are eye-watering, where this application is the logical resolution to an eyesore. The site's a mess, it's open to vandalism and fly-tipping, and it needs repurposing. Critically, the National Planning Framework assures us that if repurposing will not have a greater impact on the openness of the Greenbelt, the redevelopment of brownfield, whether it's redundant or in continuing use, does comprise appropriate development in the Greenbelt. The planning officer deems there to be a single building, which we've now heard is two buildings, discounting the rest. In response, planning decisions across England have concluded that glass houses on a site very much do carry weight for planning purposes. Knights have offered precedence, which you have read. I mention another one. At Caverswell last year, Moorlands District Council approved an application to put four bungalows on the site of a disused garden centre. Members concluded there, one, that the scheme would have less impact on the openness of the Greenbelt than the structures currently on site, and two, that the site was deemed to be in a sustainable location and would not lead to increased bar use by comparison to the retail use that was recommended, just as could happen at Roselands. So the buildings across this site must constitute a material consideration in weighing their impact on the green belt and for overall planning balance. Once removed, the impact of the site on the green belt will be significantly less. I suggest, therefore, that this is an appropriate form of development in the green belt for the following material reasons, and I'll give you no less than eight of them. The proposed dwelling and surrounds will greatly improve the openness and visual amenity of the green belt. It will have less impact on the openness of the green belt than the existing buildings, glass houses, polytunnel beds and areas of hard standing. Spread across the site, it will be a central building. There will be a substantial decrease to the overall floor area, even if the glass houses were discounted. It includes a self-built dwelling on a windfall site, and so it wouldn't impact on the council's housing number calculations, and it would address the shortfall of self-build provision within the borough. It's a sustainable form of development, particularly when considering the substantial reduction in associated vehicle movements. Local users confirm that cycling and walking along the verge along the lane are commonplace with no accidents, debunking the Highway Authority desk studies. The access into the site would improve exponentially, setting the proposed entrance gates back from the highway and improve highway safety. The applicant's well-designed custom-built home would improve the rural character of the immediate surrounding area, including the removal of unattractive buildings, and the proposal makes efficient use of brownfield land. It's going to be neighbour-friendly by tidying up the site and reducing vandalism, fly-tipping, and indeed the worry of unsympathetic commercial activity and increased traffic on a quiet residential lane. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you. Juliet, if you could return to your seat, please.
I'll return to.
Yeah. You may stay if you wish to.
No, I'll go back. I'll join okay. I was going to say my client, but she's not my client.
Glad we didn't record that bit.
Definitely not my client.
Right, you've heard those. Who wants to go first, or do you want to address any issues?
No, just
Councillor Andy McNaughton.
All I like to say is looking at the photographs, it looks a right mess at the moment. You know, not particularly green or not particularly nice and anything. So I would have thought building a sensible looking house there would improve the area. So I think we ought to agree with you personally.
I think we need to have a bit more conversations. Councillor Scott Spencer.
Going off what the new government have said regarding planning, I think this falls within that sort of grey belt, green belt type scenario. It's quite clear there's a lot of hard standing there, and it's not going to be ripped back to nature on its own. I think there's the risk that it could go back into general sort of land sort of population, could be bought by a developer which would want to put even more on there. I think it's a local person, there's a local need because she is local. I think it's low impact in its design. I think there is, maybe we could put some amendments to it, to the design, I think, to allow it to go through, but as far as I see, I can't see a particular issue with it. Okay.
Councillor Rob Kenny?
Even though the majority of the things mentioned do actually tick boxes, we're not currently going to have a new MPPF this week. We have to go by the current MPPF, and so our hands are tied really in this respect. But I do actually think that sometime in the future, within the next 12 months, when things have changed and new plans have got, planning laws have come out, that should be put forward again, then they probably would get permission, but not at the moment.
Councillor Roy James.
The only concern I have is that I think putting as a single dwelling bungalow type on this site is a good idea. My concern will be the site is fairly large. How can we stop future development on that site?
So we have to deal with the application before.
That is my concern.
Could we not put a condition in then, should this recommendation be overturned? Could we put in a condition that no further building could be done on the site?
No.
Councillor Marnie Phillips.
It's really along the same lines as the other councillors have discussed. So, as there are already some brick buildings on there that can be presumably developed in their own right, does that mean then that should there be a property built on there, that then they can move forward and build additional properties with extensions, if you like, on the footprints of the existing buildings?
No, can I come back to the chairman? Can I just refer you to paragraph 7.1? So we contended that there was a fallback position under what we call the prior approval process, or the Class MA. But if you read that paragraph, we're not convinced that those buildings are structurally capable of conversion through that procedure, and no applications have been forthcoming to actually demonstrate that.
Come back.
Yeah.
But surely they would be repaired as part of the building of a new structure on that footprint.
No, I think that there are two issues here, Councillor. One is,
I think what I'm looking at is the potential, as has been raised by other councillors,
for them to be converted.
Builds in the future on the footprints of the already existing buildings, whether that is a potential.
We can remain focused on the application before us.
I
think there are two issues here, Councillor. One is the reference to a fallback position, particularly with the building on the right-hand side, whether that could be converted under the prior approval procedure. Within the report, it says that we're not convinced that that is structurally capable of conversion. But the other question is basically, in terms of greenbelt openness, what the assessment does, it looks at the floor areas of all the buildings on the site and structures, together with the volume, and then in accordance with National Greenbelt policy and MPPF, then that shouldn't be materially larger than what's on site. So that's why there's reference to the buildings in terms of footprint and volume, and also as a fallback position.
Thank you.
Councillor Spencer.
So if I were to understand this, then the existing, or not existing because they're partly demolished now, glass house, the tunnel, and all the guardian structures, so forth. If someone was to come on there and build those, they would be substantially bigger footprint than the proposed building, and yet we're saying that isn't closing down the green belt, but a building which is potentially half that size is encroaching the green belt.
Which means, I'll read the relevant paragraph in the MPPF. So, limited infilling or the partial or complete redevelopment of previously developed land, whether redundant or in continuous use, excluding temporary buildings, would not have a greater impact on the openness of the green belt than the existing development. So what we're saying is the glass houses and polytunnels, in our opinion, are temporary structures and therefore are not included within the calculation of volume and footprint in terms of the impact on openness, and therefore the proposed buildings would have a greater impact.
Whereas 40 years of solar panels is considered.
Anyone want to pick up on the highways issues?
Yes.
Councillor Phillips.
I think it's plan 3, I think, or is it picture 3 that shows the road picture, was it? And then the one before, which showed the entrance.
So this is the
entrance and exit, which was being used whilst it was a garden centre as a main access.
That would be utilised and improved as part of this proposal.
I'm confused as to why it was okay to use as a garden centre for multiple people coming backwards and forwards, and yet not for a couple of residents. Well,
the lawful use of the garden centre was only established in 2020 with the submission of a lawful development certificate, which demonstrates as a legal test on the balance of probabilities that use had taken place for more than 10 years. So we're not looking at the planning merits of that type of application. We're looking at a legal test on the balance of probabilities that sufficient evidence was submitted to the local planning authority, which demonstrates that parcel of land has been used for over 10 years as a garden centre and therefore is immune from any enforcement action and establishes its lawful use as such.
So, sorry, Chairman, but surely everybody would have been aware of the fact that there was a garden centre and it was being used as a garden
centre. Yes, absolutely.
And yet, so what you're saying is that it wasn't being lawfully used, the entrance.
There was no planning permission for that use.
But yet nobody.
No,
was
historically it was
for all
accepted.
Those years to be bothered to do something about it.
Well, it wasn't. We did. Local planning authority didn't consciously pursue that. The applicant submitted an application to the council,
which is common practice. Councillor Brycross.
Yeah, surely there's enough material conditions in this that we could recommend the approval of it. You know, it's going to improve the visual amenity. There'll be less impact on the existing site as it is. It's a self-built on what I class as a derelict site, which it's something that we're short of in this borough, on self-build. And the improved entrance is going to improve safety, even though it's not been a problem before. So I have difficulty.
Okay.
In what I see as a derelict site, we see the footings there, what, about a metre high, the brick things?
It's
I take it there's
yeah,
no
yeah.
concrete outstanding, but they are structures that do catch the eye. So, you know, to me, this is a great improvement on what is there on a bit of derelict land. And as someone else, another councillor's it could be bought up at some time by a developer, and you won't get one house on there, they'll have 20. You know, there are other houses off the lane looking at the plan, apart from Nebraska, that there's, I see, what? Zuzen, Lilac Moor, Moss Acre, and there's a pumping station. Surely that's more of an eyesore than one bungalow on what is a bit of derelict land. So, you know, I have difficulty to accept the recommendation with the material conditions that I've quoted.
Okay, I've got Councillor Andy McNaughton and then Councillor Marnie Phillips.
I was going to say, I was looking at the highways when it said there's no footpath, there's no street lights, and you want a more sustainable access like cycling and walking. But I mean, if that applies to all the houses, lots of houses in the country, and as you say, there's another one looking at the photograph just around the corner, you know, how do people get there? By sort of putting those conditions in, you're sort of ruling out any kind of rural building without having to put a footpath and street lights in to start with. I mean, probably not a very busy road. I would imagine the people who live there would access it by car most of the time anyway. So, you know, I can understand why the highway is saying that, and people will, but I think it's a bit of an overkill, personally.
Councillor Marnie Phillips?
Yeah, I would suggest that it was probably one of these areas where they haven't actually been out and physically visited to actually get a real idea of what the locality is actually like. And I believe that the... forgive me if I'm wrong, but the applicant has a parent that also lives close to that plot. So we're talking about the fact that she's able to walk to go and care for her parent. Obviously, if she wasn't doing that and there was a need for additional care, then there would be multiple cars then. I know that's not a material planet, but that's a reality. That's the reality. We have someone who's wanting to keep the family together, and also the land which has been in the family for a long time. And if we ended up by having a developer, as somebody else has said, coming into that, it could look like a very, very different picture to what we're seeing now. And an eyesore.
Yes, okay. Richard just want to come back.
So the debate so far has focused on impact and openness of the Greenbelt, in that Greenbelt policy allows the infill in or the partial complete redevelopment of previously development land, which this does constitute, providing it doesn't have a greater impact on the openness of the buildings or structures or what's there. So if that could be demonstrated, you then have the second policy consideration. The Greenbelt, that provision within Greenbelt policy doesn't say you can put residential development in the open countryside. And therefore, if I can refer you to 5.11 on page 9. And this refers to reason 2. This site is outside of the sustainable settlement hierarchy, and in order to satisfy residential policy requirements, you have to demonstrate a demand, a need rather, through a local housing needs assessment. And because that hasn't been demonstrated, it conflicts with policy C5, which precludes against new residential development in the open countryside, whether it's self-built or not. Because we're not, you can see from the report, we're not debating or disputing that it's a self-build. Mm. We accept that, but looking at experiment 8.5 on page 15, and it's the last sentence on paragraph 8.5. So self-build does carry some weight, but it doesn't give you an automatic right to build in the open countryside. So there's still a fundamental policy conflict with housing policies.
Councillor Scott Spencer.
So if I understand correctly then, if the applicant was to submit a application for if it is sustainable, if there is a need regarding her local family, her local groups in the area, upon an inability to afford housing in the area, would that satisfy that element which is causing an issue at this moment in time, should it be deemed appropriate, if that was submitted?
Okay, can I just read, yeah, so basically the relevant part of policy C5, if I can just read that out to you. So in areas outside of settlements identified in SP3, that's assessment hierarchy, proposals for new development will need to meet criteria listed in SP7 together with the following criteria. Number one, it's demonstrated that provision cannot be accommodated within the settlement hierarchy. Secondly, a parish-based housing local needs assessment and an appraisal of the scheme shall accompany any planning application, proving that it will meet a defined need. And then the third goes on to design aspects.
So what we're saying is that hasn't actually been submitted as yet?
No, it's not been demonstrated.
Okay. So,
so, it, so,
so it could be demonstrated in a future application, potentially?
It could be demonstrated if you can demonstrate that you can't build a house in Stafford, Stone, Eccleshall, Nosall, etc.
Next to a family member.
No, that's not what the policy says.
Oh, no, no, there's a policy set, granted, but we're talking about the actual, this particular application.
In practice, you'd need to demonstrate that there isn't a location to build a house in any of those, in any of the 11 key settlements in the hierarchy.
Councillor Roy James.
Mr. Chairman, if we were to grant this application or go against the recommendation, would this set a precedent and will it open the floodgates to other planning applications from areas which are close to or within the Greenbelt?
In my view, if you approve this application, it would then be quoted by applicants and agents, not just in the Greenbelt, but in terms of elsewhere in the open countryside.
Ouch.
Councillor Andy McNaughton.
I was going to ask a similar question. If we did approve it, who would appeal against our approval?
No one would appeal against our approval, I don't think.
So if we approved it, it would go ahead, but would set that precedent. So we could go against the policy as well.
But you'd have to demonstrate a planning reason, Councillor, for doing that, for a proposal that is contrary to policy.
Councillor Marley Phillips.
So, as there are residences surrounding this particular plot of land, do those houses, have they been built independently? Are they associated to farms? How have they been built in the Greenbelt?
Well,
I think if
you look at the age of the properties, I don't think we can see any of them on the photograph, can we?
No, we can see just the areas.
But I suspect they will predate Greenbelt policy. They're certainly going to predate local plan policy.
So has a precedent not already been set?
No, because there could be replacement as well, which is acceptable.
Councillor Van Hobbs.
Yeah, but equally, it would be much worse for the Greenbelt, wouldn't it, if a commercial business was set up again there. It would be much better, wouldn't it, for the Greenbelt to have a small bungalow.
You've still got to have a reason to depart from your own policies.
Okay. Just before I come to you, Tony. Juliet, you can speak, but only on a point of clarification on what's been discussed.
Okay, so one point of clarification is that the properties built down Moss Lane, some of them are fairly recent in my lifetime, and the other point of clarification is it might be a precedent, but this is a garden centre, and there aren't hundreds of garden centres in the Greenbelt, and most of them are actually trading, so it's not an open field.
Okay, thank you. Who wanted to speak? Councillor Tony Nixon.
I think the problem here is the officers have recommended correctly on the planning policy we've got at the moment. I don't think they had a choice but to refuse it. If we're to overturn that, we need a very good reason to do so. And I'm just trying to think of one.
Councillor Rob Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, the precedent that we could set here is us going against our own current planning policy.
Mm-hmm. Anyone wish to speak anymore? Councillor Roy James.
I was just thinking, you know, how if this application was to be withdrawn and resubmitted after the new NPPF comes to life, would that not be a better idea than trying to approve something which the officers have correctly identified as it goes against the current NPPF?
I don't think we can ask the applicant to withdraw, councillor, because that would then deny them the right to appeal to the Secretary of State on a refusal.
Any sort of comments? Anyone want to make a recommendation or proposal?
Not yet, but can I ask a question? So if a developer, a commercial developer, was to go in there and apply to build a commercial building on there, which then became derelict, that footprint could then be used to then build a property on legally?
No, the use of the site is as a nursery garden.
So we can't get away from
it's that. A nursery, that's it. It's not an industrial site or anything like that. And
so can I just interrupt? It's not a nursery site, it's a garden centre.
It's a garden centre.
And it's an E2 or whatever it is. It's got commercial use. Not just as a garden centre.
But it's not traded since 2005. No more comments?
I would be very uncomfortable if we proposed something explicitly against our policy in this area.
I think you need to distinguish between what can be built on the site under the lawful development certificate and the policy conflict with residential policy within the development plan and the strategy.
Councillor Scott Spencer.
What can be built lawfully?
So the use is what would be, I haven't brought a copy of the actual lawful development certificate, but within that use,
yes.
But any buildings would still require a planning application.
Sure. So that lawful development could be reinstating the footprint of the buildings that were there originally, theoretically.
Yeah. Well, that would be...
You could reinstate, let's say, a brick built...
That would be a material consideration in any planning application.
For the same volume, and then that potentially could then be converted at a later date with an additional application.
No, you still face a policy objection,
right.
Policy conflict with housing policy.
Okay.
Any more for any more?
Well, Chairman, I find it difficult. We're talking about building something in the open countryside in the Green Belt, when in fact there's something that's already there that's a derelict site that is an eyesore. In a material condition, this would have less impact than the existing site. That's a material condition. It will improve the visual amenity because, from the photos we've seen, it is an answer.
That's Rob Kelly.
Yeah, I particularly agree with Councillor Cross, but that's probably why the new MPPF will change it. But at the moment, it's not.
It doesn't. That's right.
Only for clarification.
Can I?
So, only for clarification and only something that's been spoken about previously.
This is directly referring to the officer's report at 5.5, where SP4 sets out housing growth distribution, with 8% being allocated to the rest of the borough area. And that's the point at which development outside the settlements and all the rest of it would be allowed to take place, which seems to me to be exactly this example in terms of material consideration.
Yeah, but also at 5.12 it says that 929 properties have been completed in that area.
I think what you need to then say
and we've got under provision
5.6, Chair,
mm-hmm.
Then you go to SP7, 5.6, which in turn then directs you at criteria 4 to C5. And it's C5 which the proposal is in conflict with.
Okay, could you remind us what C5 is?
C5 is residential proposals outside of the settlement hierarchy, and I just read out the relevant provisions to Councillor Spencer.
Councillor and Hobbs.
If the framework's going to change anyway, it won't matter if
the
precedent's
now
been set.
Yes, it does now.
You don't know how the framework is going to change, though.
It seems like you feel as if it probably will change.
Well, I know Councillor Rob Kenny said that, but how do planning officers feel about potential for change? No?
I think Councillor Kenny may well be right. Certainly, from what we hear, the government is likely to change in some way. We don't know what way at this point in time, and something that might happen in the future isn't a material consideration you can take into account today.
Yeah. Councillor Roy James.
You know, I asked whether the applicant would withdraw the application. Would another idea be to defer it?
For what reason, Councillor?
Well, basically because of the uncertainty of the future of the MPPF. I mean, I don't know whether that is possible, but you know, otherwise, unfortunately, it's going to hurt.
You could be deferring it for...
Yeah, it's going to hurt because I think you're going to have to.
An unknown time period.
You have to go with the recommendation of the officers, which is going to
I think
hurt.
There is some sympathy in the room that there will be an improvement in the visual appearance of the site. But if we have a conflict with planning, that could prove to be something that bites us a bit later on.
Chair, legal have just given up. A relevant point in that if members were wishing to defer, you could defer it for a housing needs assessment to be submitted to try and accord with policy C5. But that still doesn't overcome. You've got four reasons for refusal. That would address the second reason. There's still a dispute in terms of how we assess the calculations in terms of impact and openness, and then you have the two highway reasons for refusal as well.
Councillor Tony Nixon. To be quite honest, I don't think the highways reasons are particularly valid, given the amount of traffic that's going to be expected to increase compared to what it was when it was a garden centre. I think if it was only those two reasons, we could approve this. But it's not just those two reasons, is it?
That's right.
I have to say it's an uncomfortable situation where I think we have to agree with the officers and refuse the application. And I think, you know, if the applicant wishes to appeal, yes, or wait until the revised NPPF comes up, where the application could be resubmitted and may possibly be accepted.
Well, it depends on what the NPPF says.
Yeah, but we don't know that.
No. I think totally
at the moment we have to go on what's
if I could come back, the officer did suggest that a housing need reason could be put forward.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be better perhaps to defer it if the applicant wishes to put a need for housing forward rather than refuse it?
But your proposal,
I would second that, Chair, if it's proposed.
So you're proposing to defer on for a housing need assessment to be submitted? And that's seconded by Councillor Scott Spencer. So we have to take a vote to defer on those grounds.
Just
check this side first.
Or
all.
To follow.
Yes.
Members, just to clarify, policy C5. It does say that development will need to meet criteria listed in SP7, together with all of the following criteria. So you would need to demonstrate that provision cannot be accommodated within the settlement hierarchy under SP3, and a parish-based local housing needs assessment can be submitted to define the need and for the development to be of high quality design.
But it's not for us to define, it's for the applicant.
Well, it's the applicant to demonstrate that it can't, what they're proposing cannot be accommodated within the settlement hierarchy. And if not, then a local housing needs assessment can then demonstrate that it will meet a defined need. So you're not refusing it on just because of a housing needs assessment. You need to defer it on all three, because all three of those criteria need to be satisfied.
Right. So it has been proposed to defer.
Or it depends whether it's an amended proposal, because the original proposal wasn't on those three criteria.
Okay,
so Tony,
you need to, you know, sharpen the pencil there. Then. So those three criteria.
Would it be possible to fulfil those three criteria?
That's for the applicant to demonstrate, not for the local planning authority.
So if we do defer, we have to defer for the applicant to submit evidence in relation to those three points.
Yeah. But at this moment in time, you still need to overcome the other three reasons for refusal.
Yeah.
Impact and openness of the greenbelt,
yeah,
and the two highway issues.
Well, okay, so I think there's some debate about the impact.
That's already.
Yeah.
That's okay. Inappropriate development is by definition harmful to the green belt, but should not be approved except in very special circumstances. So if the applicant can show that there are special circumstances within that time frame that we're talking about, would that then give us something else to be able to...
The applicant would need to address all four reasons for refusal.
Okay. But the proposal is to defer whilst the applicant does that.
Yeah.
And I would accept what Councillor Nixon said, that we propose that the planning application is dealt with in that way, as on deferral, to allow the applicant to reflect on the position against the policy of the council.
Mm-hmm. Happy with that?
If the officers did not agree,
okay. Okay, so proposed and seconded to defer on those grounds.
Yeah. Just triple check.
Seconded
on those grounds.
Yeah. Okay, well done. All those in favour of deferring? That's everyone. And I would go along with that as well for that reason. So. Sorry to say, 55 minutes later, well, we have deferred. So we move on to the second item on the agenda, application number 24/39235. Demolition of the former co-op department store. Councillor Kenny has declared a not personal interest. Right, who's taking this one? Okay, John.
Thank you, Chairman. This application is for prior approval for demolition of the main, the modernish part of the co-op building. Should note it is not a planning application and therefore the matters to be considered are different to those that would be if this was a planning application. The prior approval of the authority is required as to, firstly, the method of demolition and secondly, any proposed restoration of the site. So looking at the site, you can see it on the screen. The site is a highway to three sides, Stafford Street to the north, Princes Street to the west, and Crabbery Street to the south. There's also a smaller frontage to Jailgate Street to the east. However, that part of the building with the 1930s facade is not proposed to be demolished. You should note that all four of those streets that are mentioned are essentially pedestrianised, but with delivery, vehicle deliveries. The Council's Conservation Officer raises no objection to the demolition of the 1970s building, which lies outside of the Stafford Town Conservation Area boundary. Now, if we just go to Plan 1, please, Rich. Right. So, that plan's relevant because what this application is seeking approval for is the demolition of the blue part and the retention of the green. So it's the whole of the 1960s, 1970s part at the back and not the 1930s part at the front. I've got three updates to this report. So following the receipt of an amended desk-based assessment, the county archaeologist has provided revised comments on the application, raising the following points. The supporting information is suitably comprehensive and provides mitigation recommendations, including an archaeological watching brief. The conclusions are generally supported and are mostly in line with previous advice. The county archaeologist is supportive of the suggestion for public engagement through heritage interpretation, and it is recommended that a mechanism to secure this is considered. The recommendations remain the same, no objection subject to conditions, and it's considered that any heritage interpretation will be better secured through proposals to redevelop the site. Any interpretation boards on hoardings would be temporary in nature and any permanent features would become an unnecessary constraint to redevelopment. Secondly, the agent has provided a revised demolition method statement in the hope of avoiding the need for further application to discharge conditions should prior approval be granted. This revised method statement, which is version 3, highways are happy with this except for one thing, and that is for HGVs reversing into the site. Now, if we just go back to the aerial photograph a moment. It's not very clear on there. Go to the next one, please. Right. Where the arrow is pointing number 2, that is a small yard area. And this is the concern that highways have. Because of the size of it, you couldn't possibly turn a vehicle within that area. You couldn't turn a car within it, let alone a heavy goods vehicle. So there's no possibility of vehicles being turned within the site. So it's recommended that condition 2 be amended to include demolition method statement version 3. And we then omit condition 3. It's considered that a vehicle reversing into the site using a banksman is the only option, other than vehicles parking on the public highway, which would require a permit. And then the final update is in
So they won't be reversing. Did you say they will be reversing in, or they won't be reversing into that?
The only way to be able to use that area in the initial part is to reverse into it using a banksman, which is a person directing the vehicle, standing behind it and making sure there's no obstructions, etc. Now, once demolition gets underway, they'll start pulling parts of the building down. It will then be more of a site to be able to access, but in the first instance it's a very small area.
And will it be, would it, sorry, I realise that it's perhaps not appropriate at this moment, but so is that where the demolition would start from, that side where number two is then?
Yeah, that's my understanding, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Carry on.
Chair, there'll be a condition to that effect.
Sorry?
There'll be a condition that would allow, or set out, the timing of the demolition.
The demolition method statement, yes. Yes. The third update is further to the council's tree officer consultation response as set out in the report. The applicant has provided a detailed tree protection plan and associated tree schedule. The tree officer has advised that these are acceptable and recommends that demolition works are carried out in accordance with these documents in order to avoid significant harm to the trees. Therefore, it's recommended that condition 4 is revised. So, if we now go just briefly through, there's only 4 photographs that show each side of it. That's the Jailgate Street frontage, which is to be retained. Number 2 is the Stafford Street, and in fact, where those gates are is that small yard area. So you can see the width of it. It's enough to get a vehicle in, and you could be reversing the vehicle in and sort of loading demolition material into it, or on the soft stripping of the site, those kind of things that are being recovered from the site. That's Stafford Street. Number 3 is taken at the junction of Stafford Street and Princes Street. So Stafford Street is going to the left, Princes Street straight down where those trees are, and hence the tree officer's comments. And then the final one is image 4, which is Crabbery Street, where you can see the edge of one of the trees as well. So, Chairman, the report recommends that the application is approved, prior approval is granted subject to a total of 7 conditions. I want to vary that by deleting condition 3 as mentioned, by amending the demolition method statement listed in condition 2 to refer to version 3 of August 2024, and to reword condition 4 so that it says the demolition work shall be carried out in accordance with the tree protection plan, reference PRJ01TTEARB TPP V1-001, revision P01, and the associated BS 5837 2012 tree schedule, reference 784-B047195.
Did you all get that?
yeah.
Sounds like a good plan to me, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, John. Julian, you wish to speak on this?
Yes, I think this is very good.
Yes, please. Have you finished, John?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think this is.
Yeah, so you know the rules. 5 minutes,
yeah.
Give you a nod when you've done 4 of them.
Okay.
Okay.
I think this is a good proposal. It's a good plan. There's stipulations here that seem extremely reasonable. It's good for the town, especially at the north end of the town centre, where much redevelopment is necessary. I mean, put it straightforward, you've got to do the demolition to carry forward the plans for down the line. I mean, health and safety objects have been catered for here to the public. Also, the wildlife concerns, they've been taken on board. To cut it short, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy with the present plan.
Thank you. Wish to say any more?
No, I've got nothing more to say.
Thank you. I'll just open it up. I think, Brian, were you first?
Yeah, I know it's in the report. The crushed brick were wanted initially 5 metres, and we've recommended 3 metres high. Was this, once it's all crushed and piled, will it then be taken away? Or is it going to be used in the build to make new bricks or whatever?
Potentially it could be taken away, but the demolition method statement provided for it to be retained on site in piles of up to 5 metres high. I take the view that that's too high. It would be readily visible over 2.4 metre hoardings, and also on a windy day you would effectively get dust and things like that. So I think 3 metres is much more reasonable. It's going to be less noticeable. It may be that it's all removed, but it might be that some of it, for example, is used to fill in the basement areas and things like that, because there are things that could use some of the material.
Right. Is there anything where there's a dampening system going to be put in place? I can't remember seeing anything. But if you've got piles of dusty brickwork,
I think that's within
that
demolition.
Could be there for donkey's years, you know, before development
takes
place. But that would be my concern.
Yes.
You know, more for the development taking place. However, if you've got piles of debris, brick dust, it could cause a problem to the public that's going to be walking past those areas for some years.
Councillor Roy James.
I recommend that we move prior approval be granted, Mr. Chairman.
I second that.
Can I add subject to the conditions that have been listed and mentioned by the planning officer?
Councillor Marty Phillips.
Yes, sorry, I have some things that I just wanted to raise. Around the construction site, what are we going to be having around there, and how high is that going to be?
2.4 metres.
Right, okay. So my concern, I've got a couple of concerns. I've got, obviously, safety issue concerns. We know that historically there have been people on the roof of that building, and so obviously I have some concerns during the demolition of that it's not, you know, that is it going to be secure enough at that height to prevent anybody from going in? But one of the concerns that I've really got is obviously across the road from the site is our local radio station, Vibe One, who will be broadcasting whilst all of this work is taking place in a room, a building that they rent from, obviously, their new landlords, the council, with single glazed windows. How are we going to mitigate the noise that's going to come from this construction site to prevent the problems that potentially is going to cause for...
On the other hand, they will be right there on the ground as an action news reporter watching what's happening.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, but what can we do to protect them and allow them to continue to do the works that they're doing?
I don't know. as much as I might empathise with that, I think the greater good is that we demolish this.
Yes, but surely there are things that can be put into place to...
By its very nature, demolition is a relatively noisy activity.
Yeah. Of course.
You know, you can't do a quiet demolition, because if it was all brickwork, you could take it down by hand, but it's not all brickwork. There's lots of concrete in it and things like that. As with any other demolition, you start by soft stripping it. So they would start by taking out things like the windows, doors, wooden parts, things like that. So you're left with a shell. So you're not going to have banging from day one all the way through, but there will be noisier periods.
Is there a way that we can, sorry, through you, Chairman, is there a way that we can, that through the statement that's going to be produced for the demolition, that side of the building can be left to last, so it will mitigate some of the noise that's going on behind it?
Well, as I say, it's on the opposite side to where the works is likely to start, so it's not going to be the first being knocked down. And in the first instance, then yes, you're going to have an amount of building between that and the building you're talking about and the demolition that's taking place. But obviously, there will come a time when they have to demolish the bit directly across.
Can I just come in on this just to aid Council for this?
Scott Spencer, for the record.
There is different methodology they can use with demolition. They can use things called munchers, which are your normal hammer pips that you would hear. So they're almost, imagine a sort of a giant claw that comes, crushes the concrete in place. It doesn't generate as much noise as the sort of jigger pick or other kind of scenario. So in their method statement, potentially, they could think of using a system like that rather than the trade noise.
So if I could continue, sorry, Chairman. Thank you. As we are then landlords, is there anything that we can do, whether it's implementing conditions in this or working with our tenants to be able to assist them in being able to continue to represent the town? It would be a shame to have to lose something while something is happening temporarily.
Asking what we can do as a landlord is different to what we can
do
as a planning authority. The two are different. The council is the applicant in this case because of the building, but you're not considering this as a owner of properties. You're considering this as a local planning authority.
Councillor Andy McNaughton.
I was going to say they haven't raised any objections, have they? If they had the opportunity to raise an objection, the radio station.
I think on page 28 we've got the thing about the dust control suppression with water cannon. And then we also go top of page 29 that the disc cutting tools and other similar noise generating tools should be used within an acoustic enclosure. So I think there are, it should be raised there. I think we have had a proposal to approve the prior approval, unless anybody's got.
I think that's been seconded.
Okay.
So I don't feel that my.
The point
it's
about.
It's been addressed completely. Obviously, suggestions have been made by Councillor Spencer, is this something that can be looked at within the.
I've got legals just coming in.
I need to clarify, in light of your repeated questions specifically about the radio and no one else. Well, you specifically mentioned radio. Have you got an interest in that particular situation?
Many years ago, I broadcasted from that same station, yes. Many years ago. However, this is not relating to the position that I had many years ago within that radio station, which actually was under a different name and had different directors, etc., etc. This is coming from a resident of Stafford that knows that building specifically,
okay,
and the ins and outs of a broadcasting station and how a noise is going to affect it, and whether there's anything we can do to mitigate that noise.
Have you had any lobbying from the radio station in relation to that?
No, I haven't.
There's a specific reason as to why I'm asking, because you've referred to the council being the landlord.
That's right.
Which is a completely separate matter to what this planning committee is deciding. But you've specifically targeted, when you've addressed it, the committee, the radio station issue, not the tenants. It's been the radio. So I need to clarify for the record whether there is anything that you should have disclosed earlier.
I'm not understanding what you're trying to refer to. I have not spoken to anybody from the radio station.
The reason why I'm asking,
I know the radio station from years ago. I was there when the tenancy was taken over from the Guildhall, so I'm aware of who the landlords are now. And obviously, my concern is for anybody who's got a business in that area,
right,
but particularly that specific type of business because of the way that it's going to affect it.
But it's with the singling out of a particular tenant, as you keep referring to, but you're not here as the landlord, you're here as the planning committee to make a decision in relation to the demolition of the building. If the tenants have issues, they will then address the council separately.
Okay. Right across.
I know it's on page 28. The environmental health officer has no objection.
Yeah.
So surely noise would have been considered by the environmental.
Was proposed by Councillor Roy James, seconded by Councillor Gareth Jones to approve the prior approval. You can't make an omelette without breaking an egg, as they say. So all those who are in favour of the prior approval. Thank you very much. That's everyone. Thank you. Thank you, Julian. We now come to application page 34. Lots of pages with this one, but hopefully it won't take up too much of our time. Okay.
Just a question, Chairman. Surely only those that went on the site visit, as this is a amended application.
To clarify, Chair, this is the application being brought back for very specific reasons. It's not to reconsider the application. So whether there was your presence on the site visit or at the previous committee meeting has no bearing on the actual request that has been made by planning.
Oh, good.
It is not a request to change the decision in relation to the material thing that happened. The officers are going to explain that there needs to be, effectively, to ensure compliance, rewording of some conditions.
Thank you for that confirmation.
So it's the rewording of conditions 29 and 30.
Thank you, Chairman. This application has been referred back to the committee following the resolution of the Special Planning Committee on the 27th of February this year that the application be approved subject to conditions and the applicant entering into a planning obligation. Due to the time that's been taken for the Section 106 agreement to be completed, if the authority was to issue a decision on the basis of the committee resolution, there would be an immediate conflict with conditions 29 and 30, given that their requirement was to monitor traffic movements during the 2024 Easter bank holiday weekend. Now, they did monitor traffic movements within that weekend, which is good. And the proposed rewording of the condition, the two conditions, 29 and 30, reflects the survey work undertaken, and it doesn't change the effect of the conditions. It makes it relate to the surveys undertaken rather than require them to do them on that period of time, which they can't now do in the future. So, the proposed wording is on page 35 of your agenda. and then we've attached the previous committee agenda from the 27th of February. And if you can look at page 105, you can see the conditions 29 and 30 before. So it doesn't change the meaning of the conditions, but the rewording makes it so that they wouldn't be instantly in breach of those as soon as a permission is granted.
Understanding that? Yes.
Yeah.
So, Chairman, the recommendation is that we vary the conditions 29 and 30 as stated on page 35 of the agenda.
As opposed to 105. Page 105. Councillor Scott Spencer.
I noticed there's also some additional conditions that have been added on since that previous application. Since 31 has been added in there, which wasn't there in the previous application. And this is where I wanted some sort of clarification, maybe some additional information on. Can you see that on page 35? It goes 30, condition 30 then jumps to condition 31, which isn't on the original.
31 is on page 105, isn't it?
It's on 105, but it isn't on the original panel on page 35.
Page 35.
Yeah, is the original.
Two amended conditions. 29 and 30.
Page 35 is the new one.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So where's condition 31 gone?
Well, not changing 31.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. So
but
this application
only changing 29 and 30.
So this application we can't look at any of the other.
All the other conditions would be the same as previously approved by committee. It's only changing these two.
Can we not look at altering that perspective being one of the conditions that was previously approved, or is that not a possibility?
Apparently not.
That's not a possibility at all.
It's
not why it's here.
It's here to agree those changes to the conditions 29 and 30, because we're talking about.
Sorry, yeah, I was confused, Chair.
Past tense rather than future. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, can I move that the application be approved subject to the conditions and the applicant entering into the planning obligation, i.e. Just amending 29 and 30.
I'll second that.
That's explicit. That's seconded by Rob Kenny. So all those in favour of that, please show. Thank you very much. All together. Well done. Sorry, I could just refer you to page 112, list of planning appeals, notified appeals on page 112. And 113, and then some decisions on 114, 118, 123. All okay with those? Everyone? Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. And on that happy note, I think we'll call the meeting to an end. Thank you very much. Thank you.